Welcome to Making Change, a podcast of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. I'm Hilde Gottlieb, author of The Pollyanna Principles and co-founder of Creating the Future, and it is my privilege to host this podcast where we talk with change leaders from around the world about this sector's potential for creating visionary social change. I'm so pleased to have Jan Masaoka as my guest today on Making Change. Jan is editor-in-chief of Blue Avocado. With over 50,000 subscribers, Blue Avocado is the second most read publication in the sector, next to the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Prior to heading up Blue Avocado, Jan spent almost 14 years as the executive director of Compass Point Nonprofit Services in San Francisco. She's a former accountant, and she has written several books on boards. Her most recent book, titled Nonprofit Sustainability, is due to be released by Josie Bass this coming November. With that range of service to this sector, Jan's observations are always pointed, and so it is my pleasure to have her share those observations with us today on Making Change. Welcome, Jan. I am so happy to have you with us.
Thanks, Hilde.
If you've listened to the interviews that we've done in the past, what we're really looking to find out is in your breadth of experience, you have been observing the sector. You've not only been involved in the sector, but you've been observing this sector for years. And you've been observing.
Yeah, in other words, I'm really old. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you're as old as me, I'm going to guess. So we're in the same boat. The observations I know, and it's always what I appreciate in both the work that you did at Compass Point and the work that you're doing with Blue Avocado, is it's always through that wonderful lens of social justice. And so what I'm looking to find out is, in your experience, when organizations and groups are really effecting social change, what is going on with those groups? What are they doing that others might not be?
Well, let me say a couple of things. First of all, you know, we all know organizations that are having big impacts, big important impacts on their communities, but they're really badly managed, right? Don't you know some of those? Everybody's always saying, oh, they're so crazy, but they do really great stuff. And at the same time, we also know organizations that, you know, could check off everything on the management audit, right, as having been accomplished, but they aren't really doing anything. So I think one of the things is that we sort of have this implied assumption that good management leads to high impact, and that isn't true. Because otherwise we wouldn't see those types of good organizations. So I think that good management can support high impact, but you really have to think about them on two different tracks. And I think the nonprofit sector infrastructure is overly focused on management as if it would automatically or necessarily lead to high impact.
So what does lead to high impact?
Well, the question that I would like people to ask, instead of the traditional questions asked in strategic planning, and just for a second, if you think about strategic planning, usually starts with the question of what are our goals? And another way to say that would be, what do we want to do? And instead of asking, and actually that's very parallel to the way the for-profit sector thinks about strategic planning, and instead of asking what are our goals or what do we want to do, I think the question we should be asking is, who is our constituency and what do they need us to be doing right now? Or put another way, who is our constituency and what kind of organization do they need us to be right now? And I think that that question is a much more compelling one towards steering people towards really the heart of what their organizations are really about and what they stand for, rather than just about, you know, increased unduplicated client service hours.
Tell me a little bit about what that looks like. What have you seen? I can imagine these being incredibly energized planning sessions.
Well, for example, I'm recently left being the chair of the Asian Pacific Islander Wellness Center, which is an organization that does primary care and AIDS services in San Francisco. And we, at one point, were thinking about closing down our direct services work because we really, you know, the direct medical care work, because we could really see that we weren't making very much money on it, that it's a very hard business to be in. You know, there were many organizations serving higher numbers of low-income Asian Pacific people than we were doing. But then when we switched the question to instead of what do we want to do, we switched the question was what does our community need us to do and what does our community need us to be, we realized that we needed to be a primary care organization. And even if it's a small primary care piece, it's really making a statement and putting our stake in the ground and saying direct care is important. And we do more through that clinic than just serving those people. We also have a great influence through that clinic on primary care work than in many other clinics that we wouldn't have if we were to abandon that work.
Yeah, and that's where you really see that split in focus, the focus on the managerial side, the focus on is it making us money, is it hitting the bottom line, versus are we accomplishing what the community needs us to?
Right.
Wow.
So let me just take that like one little step further, and in addition to asking, you know, what does our community need us to be doing right now? I mean, just one example, you know, if you had been a nonprofit organization in New Orleans or in Mississippi when Hurricane Katrina came around, people didn't say things like, well, acting as an emergency shelter, it would be mission drift. They just said, this is our community, and right now they need us to be an emergency shelter. I think just to take that one other step, and when executive directors can ask themselves instead of asking what style of leader am I or should I be, to instead ask the question, what kind of executive director does this organization need me to be right now? I think sort of, again, we kind of clutter up executive director minds with this idea that there's some large toolbox and they have to have all the tools and their skill set and have to have a quote-unquote leadership style. And again, that's very kind of centric to that individual. Instead saying, you know, what kind of exec does this organization need me to be right now? And that might be, in some cases, that might be a facilitative one. In another case, it might be an exec who's declaring martial law. As you know, I'm making some decisions here because we're caught in a consensus quagmire. So what the organization needs you to be changes over time. And I think that's a good way to look at it. And similarly, I think I do a lot of work with nonprofit boards, and instead of saying, what kind of board member should you be, asking the question, what kind of board member does this organization need me to be right now?
Well, what you're really doing is you're creating nesting eggs of the same question, and it all is about serving whoever we serve. So if the organization is asking, in one of the things that we found about strategic planning in the work that we've been doing is that it tends to ask, just as you're suggesting, it tends to ask the wrong question. And yet, strategic planning is the point in the year that you are reaching for your highest potential. And is your highest potential really looking at what is the incremental thing that we could be doing versus what does the community need from us and how can we build a great community? But you're asking that same, as I'm watching you, you're asking the same question of the board to the organization and the executive director to the board and the executive director to the staff. It really is that servant leadership sort of approach to, we're not here for me and we're not here for strength of me or strength of the organization, but really strength of whoever it is that we serve.
Well, I think that's one way to think about it, but just to say that, you know, who we serve, again, even sets up kind of an us and them environment. And I think that you started actually by asking what are the organizations that are having a lot of impact in social change. And I would say they're organizations that are deeply rooted and nested in their communities as opposed to being us versus them.
Yeah.
And just let me give you a quick example. A few years ago, I met with a group of women from a public housing project that wanted to start a girls' drill team. And they wanted to raise a little bit of money for uniforms and instruments and things like that. And I, you know, had a great talk with them. But afterwards, I realized, you know, some people would say that should be that kind of work, starting a drill team in a housing project, should be done by, like, the Y, for example, or the Boys and Girls Club. And, you know, because they are more professional, you know, they have people on the staff with youth development, they have, they have accounting policies, they have 990s on the web, you know, and what does this group of moms have? None of that, right? But I believe that most of us would agree that there's something much more compelling and much more powerful about a group of moms in a housing project doing that work than having somebody come in from the outside. There are a lot of reasons for that, but including the fact that in addition to creating a drill team and sort of number of hours of girls served, mm-hmm. they'll also be creating a lot of other kinds of things, a network of relationships, for example, a symbol of self-reliance, something that means something to people, even if they don't have daughters, for mm-hmm. example, they only have sons. And so I think that actually most nonprofits are like that, community organizations, which is that they create networks of relationships and stand for something and provide meaning for people that are not part of the service population. And all of those things are part of what the value and the social change that we create.
It is really about an organization or a group, their ability to help people self-organize and build on their own strengths. It's the working with versus working for.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure I would say it that way, but yeah, I understand what the point you're making.
Mm-hmm. What many organizations, in our experience, are very good at is thinking of how to come in and do a program for people or with people, but not having that program emanate from those people, which is really what you're talking about, for instance, with the Girls Drill Team.
Well, that's an example, but again, I think that, you know, not it, one way for an organization, once it's established, to think about what it should be doing is, again, to start with what does this community need us to mm-hmm. be doing rather than what do we want to do.
What are effective ways of finding that out?
Well, you know, I think most community organizations know that in some way. They've been distracted by what I call the philanthropic consultant industrial complex and the writing of grant proposals that get them away from all those things. So I don't think that's true of lots of organizations, but the organizations that are community-based and community-oriented, I think actually the leadership, the staff, and the board leadership often know the answers to those questions. But I think, you know, there are lots of ways to listen. One way to think about it is to embark upon a listening campaign instead of a strategic planning decision process, for example, or in advance of that. And to really, you know, interview people in depth and really listen to what people have to say and also understand the limitations of that, because you can never ask a community, you know, for example, should we shut down one of our services? No one will ever say yes. But listening is not just writing down what people have to say. It's listening more deeply to what are the most important issues.
Have you ever worked with an organization to move them from what has become the tradition? It's interesting how tradition changes so quickly. Tradition in community organizing moved into tradition of the management style that you talked about early on, talking about management leading impact. When you look at the fact that groups are now really being encouraged very, very, very strongly to focus on the management skills, the means over the ends almost. What does it take in your experience to move the thinking of an organization from that place of we really, really need to focus on the management to that place mm-hmm. of how do we get back out to be thinking about community?
Well, the easiest way, of course, is to have a new exec. you know, I know this one organization, homeless youth serving organization in San Francisco, that quite a large one. It kind of became the poster child for good management by a national consulting firm that wrote them up as a case study, and they got a lot of attention for management work. And then that executive left the organization, and they brought in a new one. And one of the first things she said was, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but she said something like, you know, I need to find out why kids on the street don't like us.
Mm.
And so she could, you know, so she was basically, you know, that probably couldn't have happened with the old exec because she was so embedded in that kind of mindset at that point. And I think that was a way to do it. Other times you have an exec who's really a terrific person, but who has been, oh, kind of infected with the management disease, and they feel really encumbered by it, and they have to do, you know, they have to do all these things. They have to check off all these millions of things. And, you know, in any organization, there are 100 things that people know they could do better. Mm-hmm. But the question is, what are the things that really we have to do better? What are the things we're going to do first? And, again, looking at the question of impact, not just the question of management. And, You know, one of the things that people do is very unembarrassing for people to say something like, you know, our accounting systems are really out of date. People don't have any social inhibition about saying something like that, but no one wants to say something, your programs are really out of date. I think we're very reluctant to, for example, within an organization, people haven't ever asked themselves which of our programs are the highest impact and which are the least impact. There's sort of this implication that they're all equally high impact, you know, just like all the children are, you know, above average. So I think really addressing with the same kind of candor and lack of inhibition about our programs that we've learned to do or about our management systems. So which of them are the highest impact? Which are the lowest? What are the reasons why one person thinks that one's high impact and someone else thinks that's another? That's a very interesting question to address, but it's one that we typically don't address because we're so busy improving our personnel policies and our technology systems and our accounting systems. And, you know, I'm in favor of all of those things. You know, I'm a former accountant, after all. We like things to be nice and neat and well managed and well accounted for. But I'm just saying that those things we're overemphasizing those things these days to the detriment of, because there's an implicit idea that they will drive high impact, and high impact is driven by something else and management supports it.
These would be fabulous questions to begin every board meeting with. I'm just thinking about the power of starting a board meeting with which are the highest impact programs that we have, and how do we know, and how are we measuring impact? How are we even defining impact?
Well, try asking that question first on the management team, and you'll typically hear a very long silence after that.
Jan, are there any programs you're working on right now with Blue Avocado that you'd like to share with folks? Because it is a wonderful, for anyone listening that is not familiar with Blue Avocado, it really is a wonderful resource. And always, I pick up something in every single issue.
Well, thanks. Well, you know, what we try to do in every issue is to have at least one article that's very practical, at least one article that throws you off balance with an unconventional viewpoint, and at least one article that's fun. So, for example, you know, I think that we had, one of my favorite fun articles was the article titled, Why Do Men in the Nonprofit Sector Wear Such Bad Shoes? We have two practical articles in the current issue. One is taking a very unconventional and different look at the issue of nonprofit conflict of interests with some several sample policies of conflict of interest. And then also an article addressing the question of can employees smoke medical marijuana at work, for example, if they have a prescription for medical marijuana. So I think those are two examples of articles you're not going to find in other parts of the nonprofit sector's media.
It's wonderful. I enjoy every single issue, and I love the fun stuff, but I also love the really practical stuff.
Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. And Jan, thank you so much for being with us. I have enjoyed this conversation. I always wish that these conversations could go 2 and 3 times as long, and this is definitely one of those. Thank you.
Thanks,
so much.
Thanks, Hildy.
Bye-bye.
Talking with Jan sure brings us back to what's important. I'm reminded of the old question of whether we're focusing on the moon or on the finger pointing at the moon. Are we focusing all our efforts at management as an indicator of potential success, the finger pointing at the moon? Or are we getting back to what's important, asking people what they need from our work, and listening to what people think are the most important things we can be doing? In our own work at Creating the Future, we know that once a group is focused on the end results they intend to create, they can easily then align their management work behind that end goal. We also know the reverse is true. When we focus on the means rather than the end results, we wind up with organizations like the ones Jan describes, organizations that are dubbed excellent by all the standards, but who make little difference in the communities they serve. So who have you seen do their work with the most amazing impact possible, and where are they aiming the bulk of their efforts? Sounds like we have the makings of another great topic to explore together at the Making Change discussion group at LinkedIn. If you're not already a member of that group, just type Making Change into the search box at LinkedIn to join the group and join the discussion. And of course, you can always find great ways to connect, as well as other terrific information, at the Chronicle of Philanthropy's website, philanthropy.com, or follow the Chronicle on Twitter at @philanthropy. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Making Change. If you have ideas for guests for this podcast, folks who are driving new ways of thinking about what it takes to create visionary social change, please get hold of me on Twitter. I'm @HildeGottlieb, or at our website, creatingthefuture.org. Thanks for listening and for wanting to create a better future for your community and our world. For the Chronicle of Philanthropy, I'm Hilde Gottlieb. We'll see you the first Thursday of next month here on Making Change.